Okay, so what's next? She makes us seek the safety of the wings of enlightenment, and then she brings light so that all fear and distress may be forsaken. So that's sort of interesting, because, well, who forgives who in that? You know, is it, do we forgive the causes of our fear and distress? That may be people, how they act, maybe circumstances in our life. So possibly it's saying she brings light so that all fear and distress, we may forgive the sources of that in our life. Or is it that Pranayamata forgives us? Because no doubt we've brought fear and distress to others. You know, or is it that others forgive us? So there's all kind of sort of possibilities in that, isn't there? And I expect it's all of them. I expect that all of those possibilities will be included in that aspect to Pranayamata. That all fear and distress in the end is forsaken. Of course, it can also be, this translation I've got here is forsaken, but the other translation I had was forgiven. So I don't know which is the more accurate one. And actually, with these things, I don't know that it, I'm probably a scholar would sniff at what I'm about to say, but I kind of wonder if it matters, actually. If you make a connection with it, those words are similar enough that if you can make a connection with both of them, that's maybe just helpful as a way in. I don't know which is the one that's more accurate, but Konza has forsaken, and that's probably more accurate. So this bit, I think, is beginning to penetrate to the consequences having a glimpse of the perfection of wisdom again. That the normal self and other lines are no longer there. So again, that was what we touched on this afternoon when we were just kind of, you know, trying to find out what these things meant to us. And there's another selection from, again, a different perfection of wisdom source, a different text from this one, in which it's the Buddha and Subhuti in that one, and they're having a conversation. And the Buddha says to Subhuti, he says, "What do you think, Subhuti? Do beings," now he says something like, "do beings wander and run around for a long time in birth and death?" It's certainly wander. I think it's run around for a long time. "And what do you think?" And Subhuti says, "Yes, Lord, they do. Yes, they do." You sort of imagine them somewhere having this conversation. Because "what do you think? They do run around for a long time, don't they?" And Subhuti's saying, "Yeah, they do." And then the Buddha says, "And is it because of eye making and mind making that this happens?" And Subhuti just says again, doesn't say much in this exchange. He just says, "Yes, that's right." So then there's a dialogue about what eye making and mind making is. And again, it's just a quite poetic way of putting what we were talking about this afternoon about getting rid of one's ego. That it's when we get into eye making and mind making. When we get into eye-making and mind-making, that we, as a result, wander about and get lost in the realms of birth and death. So we wander and get lost around the wheel of life, but we wander around it because we're caught up in this wrong view, and we make things into me and mine. And then, of course, there's yours and but then I might want what's yours. So we get into all of those sorts of, you know, ways of protecting ourselves or grabbing on to what we want and then protecting it or trying to grab somebody else's. The distinction between self and other are not being dissolved when we do that. They're being built up all the time. So this bit about all fear and distress may be forgiven or forsaken is sort of getting to the consequences of a glimpse of perfection of wisdom, where this normal self and other lines are just not there so much. So if we go back to the first verse, the first thing that Sariputra says in this exchange is perfection of wisdom is the accomplishment of the all-knowing, cognition of the all-knowing. So all knowledge is not the same as omniscience. I mean, strictly speaking, omniscience would be knowing everything and all all detailed connections. So all knowledge is not necessarily that. Difficult to imagine how that could exist in one person's mind, all knowing everything. But all knowledge doesn't need to mean that. All knowledge can mean understanding how all things work, not knowing every single fact and every single connection in detail, but understanding how all things work, understanding how all things are. And so, in other words, understanding the deepest principle of that. And that deepest principle will then be universally applicable. So it'll be, once you know it, it's applicable to all circumstances. And that's the key. It's not necessary to know all circumstances and understand them and somehow have them in your, available to your mind. But it is necessary to understand the deepest principle upon which all events, all things occur. So it's not necessary to know every fact and connection, but it's necessary to know the principle at work beneath those every fact and connection. And again, we touched on it this afternoon. It's quite encouraging, isn't it? And what this brought to my mind at this point were some, well, it's actually the first line from Lines of Reflection on Green Tara, which is said to be written by Nagarjuna. Although I think actually it's not the same Nagarjuna as I've been mentioning. It's not Nagarjuna of the Majjhimika. I think it's a different Nagarjuna. But it's a description of Green Tara figure, but a sort of reflection on it. So the first line is, the single face of the chief lady, that's Tara, the single face of the chief lady is the understanding of all events as a single knowledge. That always intrigued me. It's not a very long verse, this thing. That's the first line of it. So I at one point did know it off by heart, and I think I can still get most of it. But that first line always intrigued me. I think it's very beautiful. Single face of the chief lady is the understanding of all events as a single knowledge. And I've always associated that as being saying something about that Tara and any other bodhisattva and Buddha figure or any other enlightened being understands all events as a single knowledge is a reference to understands conditionality, understands the things in its deepest principle, understands this being that becomes, this not being that does not become. Really, really thoroughly understands that, and then, therefore, in any set of circumstances, can, you know, find their way through it or understand more clearly what's happening than the rest of us can understand it, if we can understand it at all. And I think that's what Sariputra's getting at when he says the perfection of wisdom is the accomplishment of all knowing. Then immediately after the next having just said a bit about fear and distress, leaving that behind, he says, she has gained the five eyes and she shows the path to all beings. So it's the five eyes who eventually see the, you know, this deepest principle, see, understand all events as a single knowledge. So those five eyes, you might have come across them. That's another traditional list, which probably originally comes from Hinduism rather than Buddhism, but has been taken over. So there's one's ordinary eye, which you see, so you've all got that. And then there's the psychic eye, but that's not important. So don't worry if you're not clairvoyant. Mm. It doesn't matter much anyway if you are. But traditionally, it's always sort of said it's not very important. But there's ordinary eye, psychic eye, and then dharma eye, which corresponds to insight and experience of insight. And then the fourth and fifth are the eye of truth and the universal eye, which are, you know, taking it further, going from insight to full enlightenment, and then a sort of emphatic statement of full enlightenment, because it's universal.